Hey, everybody, welcome to Pep Talk, the podcast that gives you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help us, God. We take these complex medical, health, and wellness topics that you're hearing about. We break them down into small, digestible, and understandable segments. We give you some action steps that you can take, and then we give you all the map, the keys, and the car to help yourself. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Napudi. I'm going to be taking you down this journey today on a topic that I'm getting asked all the time by the viewers, and that's what's going on with our health today. So what the health is going on is really the topic of conversation for the day. So I want you to think about this. You know, I want many of you that are like me that are over the age of 40, go back and think about whenever we were growing up as kids in the 90s and the 80s and 70s and think about people around us. You know, you may have had one or two people in your school or your community that were, you know, obese. You might have had a few people that were overweight. You might have had a couple kids that were on the autism spectrum or were in special needs classes. Now we're seeing that's the norm, not the exception to the norm. I mean, you can't go anywhere today without seeing that, you know, 60% of the population is overweight and obese, and 60% to 70% of our children are overweight and obese, and 1 in 10 kids has some type of chronic illness, which was not existent whenever we were children. And certainly we never talked 30 years ago about chronic illness as a serious problem. And now 60% of the population has at least one chronic illness, and 40% of the population has at least two chronic illnesses. So what's going on? I want to talk about that with all of you today. So just sit back and take all this in and let's talk about the health of our society today. So we've got the rise of all these chronic diseases that are, by the way, non-communicable diseases, but they're chronic. So we have cardiovascular disease, heart disease, cancer. Cancer is crazy on the rise. COPD is ridiculously off the charts. Mental disorders. I mean, the rise in mental disorders since 2020. I mean, that is something that we as groups of doctors should be getting together and teachers and influencers and people of the community saying, what the heck is going on? How do we reverse this mental illness that's out there? And by the way, asthma, allergies, bronchitis, sleep apnea, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, cardiothoracic arrhythmias, and much more are off the freaking charts right now. And I need you to understand Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, attention deficit disorder, autism spectrum, depression, bipolar, and fibromyalgia. And the list just goes on and on and on. We're not seeing a slow, steady rise. We're seeing a rocket ship of those things. And folks, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing again and again and again and expecting a different result. So let's put some common sense to what's happening and let's take some action steps that are truly going to help ourselves, our friends, our loved ones, our family, and the rest of our community. I need you to understand the causes of these are not just because. The causes are our toxic food supply, our lack of activity, our toxic medical system that's not here to help give us care or health, and really, truly our toxic lifestyles. So we have to understand, I'm going to talk a little bit about the current medical model, what's known as the allopathic model. By the way, I'm not against the allopathic model. The allopathic model saves people's lives every day from acute problems. We have the best emergency medicine on the planet, but we stink with a capital S at dealing with chronic illness. And the thought of even preventing illness in the first place is not even talked about. And by the way, in most circles, it's not even allowed to discuss. Why is that? Because when we get people healthy, it takes money out of the pockets of big pharma, big medicine, and the powers that be that want to keep us fat, sick, and nearly dead. A gentleman by the name of Dr. Claude Bernard, medical doctor, declared in 1935, he said, all the vital mechanisms have only one object: to preserve constant the conditions of the internal environment. Do you remember the topic of something called homeostasis? That's the body's ability to adapt to stress. Stress is the cause of all symptoms, sickness, and disease on the planet. And it's either physical stress, chemical stress, or neuroemotional stress, or a combination of the three. But it's not just those stressors. It's the body's inability to handle and adapt to the stress. And that only happens little bit by little bit over a long period of time. And I'm going to tell you that it is well known that most diseases and diseases on the planet are because of the body's inability to adapt to those stressors. This is based off of the idea of homeostasis. Every one of us has heard that phrase homeostasis in our science books when we were in school, in grade school even. And our systems will develop disease from pathogens, genetic issues, or et cetera, when the systems wear out. Medical prevention of disease, vital signs, blood pressure, pulse rate, temperature, you know, et cetera, just doesn't cut the mustard. So what I want you to understand is that the principles of what's called allostasis is optimal design. We are designed, divinely designed to heal. When you cut yourself, how does your body heal from that? It's designed to do that. The Band-Aid or the antiseptic or whatever it is that you put on that injury or that cut isn't what heals you. Your body heals you. In medicine, major diseases now rise in prevalence, such as essential hypertension and type 2 diabetes. I mean, 1 in 3 Americans by 2025 are going to have diabetes. Right now, globally, in some areas, like in the Middle East, 1 in 3 individuals already has this problem. It is absolutely ridiculously crazy, and we're killing ourselves because of lack of knowledge and lack of proper action steps. And to be honest with you, lack of action steps by those of us in our communities that are supposedly the health and wellness experts that are out there. I don't know about you, but I don't want to manage somebody's disease. I'd like to reverse it when possible. And certain disorders and diseases like type 2 diabetes and hypertension absolutely can be dealt with. And treating these diseases with drugs to fix these problems is just not the solution. It is a broken system, and it just doesn't work. I want to talk about a study called the Helsinki study. It was the Helsinki businessman study that was done from 1974 to 1989. It was a 10-year study. Then they went on to do a 15-year study. And what they did was they took two groups of individuals. One group of these individuals, what they did was they gave them preventative hypertensive medications. They gave them preventative medications to help their heart, to help their body, to get them healthy. And what they found was is that individuals, listen to this, individuals who took medications to prevent illness versus individuals who didn't have any intervention, they found that individuals who were in the study group had a 1.6% increase in all-cause death than the individuals that were in the control group. The individuals that that had coronary death had four out of 612 individuals that were on the medications succumbed and died to coronary death versus those that didn't have intervention. Only one out of 612 individuals actually died. The Helsinki businessman study really kind of flipped on the head preventative medicine. The unexpected results of the Helsinki businessman study really seemed to give really a permissive impression of multifactorial prevention. Basically, what they found was giving people drugs to prevent them from having diseases does not work. Well, duh, no crap, Sherlock. It should be all about focusing on the root cause and getting people healthy. Let me give you a little bit of a story. I want to talk to you about a story that I was told years ago. And the story goes like this. There's 6 blind men in a room, and an elephant is escorted into the room. And, you know, one day these men that were blind, by the way, all went up to the elephant and tried to feel around what this thing was. The gentleman that felt the ear said, oh, there's a giant fan in the room. It's this big fan that's in here. The gentleman that grabbed the tail said, oh, there's this giant thick cord with some type of bristles on the end of it. There must be some type of a cord or a tube that's in here. The individual that grabbed the trunk of the elephant said, oh, no, there's a giant tube that's in here that's moving, and there's air that's coming out the end. So there must be some type of an exhaust system that's here. The individual that went up and touched the side of the elephant said, oh, no, there's some type of giant wall that's immovable that's here. You see, they all based their observation off of their experience. and their preconceived idea, and they couldn't see the big picture. It's all about perception. And I need you to understand that our medical system is set up that way. You know, there's an elephant in the room, and that's what it is. The whole thing is what you need to see, not just the tail and the ears and the trunk and the side of it. So if you're a neurologist and you're grabbing the tail, you're coming from your neurological perspective, your idea, your perception of it. If you're an endocrinologist and you're grabbing the ear, you only think and act like an endocrinologist would. You know, my father, who's a master mechanic, taught me, you know, I don't just look at the spark plugs or the engine when somebody brings me their vehicle that's broken. I want to learn and know about the whole thing. And that's the problem, that normal healthcare, normal medicine is so compartmentalized that you're specialized in just a little bitty piece of that elephant. When the reality of it is, yeah, there's a trunk, but there's an elephant in the damn room. And when you understand that you should be looking at the entire elephant, that really changes the game. Because Americans get sick more often than anybody else in the world. Did you know that? There was a study that's been going on since the mid-1990s. And they're showing that the number of Americans has nearly doubled in suffering from chronic disease, heart disease, asthma, cancer, and diabetes. And Americans' infant mortality has increased and the lifespan has plunged. The food we eat, the medical therapies we use, the genetically modified foods and et cetera, and the DNA of other species creating new organisms that did not exist in nature before are allowed to be rampant through North America. Now we're starting to see the same things happen in the European, the Middle Eastern, and now the Asian cultures. Where now we're seeing folks in the Middle East, 1 in 3 individuals are now having diabetes. That was an American problem, not a Middle Eastern problem. In Asia, when you look at the Asian market, especially Japan and those areas versus the U.S., the number one cause of death in America is heart disease because of our lifestyle. The number one cause of death in Japan is cancer. Heart disease is number 2, number 3 because of the foods are different. And if you look at the studies, and I'm looking right now at the charts that show the rise in these non-communicable diseases. I mean, you should see, like, it's literally not just going like this. Some of these, like diabetes, is hockey sticking up. I mean, we're seeing diabetes go like this. Why are we not doing more things? 50% of US children now have chronic disease and disorders. 21% have developmental disabilities, and the current rate of autism in the U.S. is 1 in 33. Boys are having this. In 2007, just to give you an example, American Pediatrics estimated that 43% to 54% of U.S. children, that's around 32 to 33 million children, have some type of chronic illness. That's doubled now. In 2011, they're now seeing the number of school-aged children diagnosed with autism, ADD, and other developmental disabilities have doubled. By 2016, 60 to 70% of American children have chronic illness or obesity and infertility. They're saying that by 2026. If we don't do something, we don't make some changes now, folks, our children's children aren't going to be around to really to make those changes. I mean, here's another one, and I just want to throw this out, and this is going to be a little bit controversial, but can I please have the freedom to just speak freely? And I'm going to show you the data. Aluminum and other heavy metals that get put into our medications, our food supplies, and that are being injected into our body are a problem. Did you know that there are class action lawsuits happening right now with two of the biggest formula manufacturers? Go Google it. Look it up right now. There are class action lawsuits that are happening because some of the largest baby formula companies are allowing heavy metals to be in the baby formula. And when they were asked, why are you allowing this to happen? They said, well, the FDA said it was okay. Oh my gosh, that's horrible. There's no amount of lead. There's no amount of mercury. There's no amount of amalgam. There's no amount of aluminum that should be safely allowed in the human body. It's just not possible. Did you know just recently the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, just released a study they were sitting on for 2 years that they didn't want to come out, that said that there's no safe levels, zero of mercury to be allowed in the human body. I mean, this is crazy. And we're still seeing aluminum being injected into flu shots and certain medications that are being injected into people, like the hepatitis shots, the DPT shots, the MMR shots, the HIB shots, the pneumonia shots, Gardasil. I mean, over a milligram of aluminum concentrating at dosages of 10 to 20 times more than the toxic levels of mercury are being injected into people. Multiple foods, injections, and compounds and drugs are going into people, giving them triple the amount of allowable heavy metals that the human body should have. Why are you not doing things to chelate that out of the system? By the way, these are linked to autoimmune disorders, Down syndrome, autism, schizophrenia, ALS, lupus, Parkinson's, you name it, the list goes on and on. Here's another one, the Lancet study. Listen to this. Lancet infection study in February 2004, adverse events after injection of aluminum in the DPT shots, systemic review. Despite the good quality evidence, the FDA is still not recommending removing that from those medications. Why? Those medications can be preserved by those adjuvants. They can have a longer shelf life. Well, does that make it okay to take it in your body? It doesn't. Their CDC whistleblower announced that there was an MMR injection that had a 340% increase in certain types of neurological spectrum disorders. And those people were vilified when they said that. All they did was say, hey, I'm a doctor. I made an observation. There's a problem when certain people take a certain therapeutic. They have specific problems that we're observing. And instead of going, okay, let's check that out, the system that was too big to fail canceled those doctors, vilified those individuals, vilified the scientists. At what cost? At the cost of your children, at the cost of your life, at the cost of your health. It's just not okay. The Journal of Toxicology, volume 2014, article ID 491316, page 27, by the way, those of you that are wanting to fact check this, aluminum-induced entropy in biological systems, implications of neurological diseases. The findings in here made it plausible to implicate aluminum and aluminum adjuvants in medications, in foods, and in drugs that show an increase in autism spectrum and neurological disorders, period. The University of Pittsburgh study showed that certain types of injections altered the behavior in monkeys. 1994 to 1999 study shows that when you inject or ingest aluminum and heavy metals into primates, they're going to have increased problems in neurological disorders. We're seeing the same thing happen in your children. It's crazy. 2002, the Journal of the Lancet, talking about the polio shot, was responsible for half of the 55,000 cases of non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, cases that were diagnosed annually. Think about that for a minute. How did you know that? Do your doctors know that? You know, I talk about genetics all the time with my patients and with our community globally. We talk about something known as the study of epigenetics. And epigenetics is genes that turn on and turn off based off of lifestyle change and function. And let me just show you this. There are certain drugs that cause epigenetic changes. Some of these drugs that change the expression of your genes, which could lead to dis-ease or disease. Here's the list. Statin cholesterol drugs, antidepressants, beta blockers, diuretic, methotrexate, anti-inflammatories, anesthetics, oral contraceptives, certain antibiotics, change the epigenome in the body. They change your genetic expression. They alter it negatively, which can cause an increase in disease and disorders such as cancers. That's why certain medications have black box warnings on them. Pharmaceutical drugs and et cetera may be involved in the etiology of heart disease, cancers, mental disorders, obesity, diabetes, leukemia, bipolar disorders, schizophrenia, et cetera. This was in the Metabolism Clinical and Experimental Journal, volume 57 in 2008. So it's not like this is new information. It might be new for you. Antihistamines like Benadryl can cause up to a 70% increased risk of symptoms of delirium, a 300% increase in altered consciousness, and a 500% increase in disorganized speech. This was from the Archives of Internal Medicine of 2001. These drugs block the actions of important brain chemicals. One of them in particular is called acetylcholine, that can cause hallucinations and other mental disorders. So all things in moderation, even moderation. Folks that have to take antihistamines every day, or if you take Benadryl to go to sleep, that's not a good long-term idea for you. Antihistamines are also linked to Alzheimer's. There's anticholinergic drugs that block the nervous system's neurotransmitters, which are made in the gut. So anything that alters the gut microbiome is not good for the body. Those who suffer from Alzheimer's disease typically have markers of a shortage of acetylcholine. These are the medications that can cause that, according to the IU School of Medicine back in 1999. Excedrin PM, Tylenol PM, Benadryl, and Dramamine. All things in moderation, even moderation. What about non-steroid anti-inflammatories? Non-steroid anti-inflammatories may cause 20% of all heart failure and cause a massive increase in blood pressure. I just want you to know these things. In the Journal of Internal Medicine of June of 2000, magazine 160 on page 777 through 784. NSAIDs cause an increase greater than tenfold increase in the risk of congestive heart failure. Nonetheless, it was concluded that large portions of the U.S. hypertension, that's blood pressure, causes may be a result of overuse of these pain medications. It's as safe as a Tylenol, they say. It's as safe as a non-steroid anti-inflammatory, they say. Well, these non-steroid anti-inflammatories cause 20% of heart failures, according to the Archives of Internal Medicine of October 28th of the year 2020. Well, sorry, the year 2002. Let's see. Here's another one. There's another study in the Archives of Internal Medicine, June of 2000, that shows the study followed more than 80,000 women between the age of 31 and 50, and they were initially hypertension-free. The women who used non-steroid anti-inflammatories 22 days or more per month, the risk of high blood pressure increased by 86% because those medications can damage the liver and the kidneys, and the liver and the kidneys regulate the pressures in the body. That was in the Archives of Internal Medicine, October 28, 2002. What about the effects of glucose-lowering treatments and all-cause mortality? Glucose-lowering treatments are things like insulin and metformin and things of that nature. 13 studies included 34,533 patients. 18,315 of them received intensive glucose-lowering medications, and 16,280 of them received the standard treatment. 9% reduction of glucose equals an 11% increase in all-cause mortality. Let me say that again. 9% reduction of glucose. Now, I want to be careful what I'm saying here. Lowering your sugar levels and insulin levels is important when you do it naturally. But this study that was in the British Medical Journal in 2011 showed that with the use of these medications by lowering glucose by 9%, had a 19% increase in all-cause death. Lowering glucose by 14% had a 43% increase in cardiovascular death. So is the juice worth the squeeze? Would it make more sense to have lifestyle changes to help get to the root cause of people's problems? Here's another medication. What about protein pump inhibitors? Protein pump inhibitors, these are medications that are taken for, this is things like omeprazole and other medications for heartburn, reflux, indigestion, GERD, and et cetera. Now, if you don't correct these, this is not only an uncomfortable deal, but can lead to constant irritation of the esophagus, which can lead to certain types of cancers like Barrett's esophagitis and et cetera. But here's the study. This is a cancer study, May 5th of 2009. They did a protein pump study. They found that PPI medication use leads to an increased cancer in individuals that use these. This study was done from 2009 to 2010, suggesting that PPIs can increase certain types of cancers in the body. It really is about your diet, folks. It's about minimizing these types of foods: soybean oil, sunflower oil, corn oil, peanut oil, cottonseed oil, grapeseed oil, and canola oil, and getting good fats like omega-3 fats, having coconut oil, having MCT oil, having avocado oil, having extra virgin olive oil, having a good healthy diet where it's a 1-to-1 ratio or a 3-to-1 ratio, which is good fat to bad fat. That's really, really important. I think it's also important to understand that that we are what we eat. And if we eat good foods, we're going to be healthier people because our bacteria in our body is healthy. We have the right amount of fiber in our system. We're taking foods in that are going to help heal our body and the right supplements. Folks, I'm telling you right now, if you're not supplementing properly, you're not going to help improve the quality of your life. You're over the age of 30, you should be taking a plant-based multi-enzyme. You're over the age of 30, you should be taking some type of a short-chain fatty acid postbiotic, whether it's a supplement or you're getting a short-chain fatty acid foods in your body, like extra virgin olive oil, things like ghee butter. You need to be taking some type of a microbiome, microbacteria formula. I use a master microbial product that I use that gets the microbiotics past the stomach, has a 99% absorbability and survivability into the GI tract, and helps the body improve its function. You should also be taking something else to signal your cells, whether it's a hormone therapy, whether it's a peptide therapy, whether it's some type of bioregulator. We need to get the body signaling. So the reality of it is what can we do to avoid these non-communicable diseases? We need a healthy nervous system. We need to get our body moving. We need to look at the drugs that you're taking. You need to consult with your physician and say, what other options do you have than me taking those medications that I listed to you above? What lifestyle changes do you need? Self-care is the real healthcare. You need to learn how to take care of yourself. The better you take care of yourself, the better you're going to be. You're over the age of 30. You need to be taking for sure a vitamin D3 supplement between 10,000 and 15,000 international units per day. I also recommend a multi-mineral. I use Baja Gold sea salt or Celtic sea salt every day, about a half a teaspoon. I do it first thing in the morning in some water and drink it down, and I salt my food like crazy. Plant-based minerals, eating a clean diet, eating omega-3 fish oils, doing the right things will help you improve the quality of your life. But you've got to go down the route of knowledge. You got to get the knowledge. And knowing that you're not going to get healed through a potion, a lotion, a pill, a supplement, or a drug. It's all about understanding your lifestyle, living your lifestyle based off of your genetic function, knowing your body type, knowing your blood type, having the right supplements, and taking the right action. If you'll do those things, you'll improve the quality and function of your life. I don't care what symptoms or diseases you have. That's the key. That's the key to health, period. And it's never going to change. Our genes and our cells and our functions aren't changing. You need to do the right things for that. So I know this is a lot of information, but I want you to go back and watch this podcast again. I want you to share this with your friends and family members. Go to our website, go to peptalk.world. That's peptalk.world. Make sure you like, subscribe, and share this information with your friends. Tag us on social media. We want to know that we're making a difference in your lives and the lives of your loved ones in the community. Knowledge is power. But wisdom is taking that knowledge and applying it to your life. Folks, until we meet again, I'm Dr. Eric Naputi. God bless you. God bless America. And God bless the world. Stay smart out there, folks. And we'll see you soon. Be well.